Well, 2 weeks ago at Dan's baptism, we looked at the book of Ecclesiastes, and we saw the writer is Solomon. He's the wisest man who ever lived. And the question that Solomon addresses is, what is the answer? Why am I here? What's the point? Am I missing something? What's the answer? And just like a philosopher, Solomon often leaves things hanging in the air. He leaves us to do the arithmetic. And that's never more so than in our reading. What did you make of the reading? What did you think of it? It has some very famous words. So, chapter 8, verse 15, eat, drink, and be merry. Chapter 9, verse 4, a living dog is better than a dead lion. Chapter 9, verse 11, the race is not to the swift. Those sayings have come and entered the English language. But what's it all about? Well, come with me to our reading. And have it open in front of you, because we're going to go through it, we're going to look at it. But maybe as we come to it, I want you to think of two sort of bookends. Okay, you've got a bookshelf, and there you've got a bookend this end and another one at this end. Well, that's rather like our passage. It's got two bookends. Bookend number one, says Solomon, God and his ways are unknowable. That's his first bookend. So, chapter 8 and verse 16, when I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep, day or night, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. What does all that mean? Well, Solomon says from a purely human perspective, under the sun, if you try to make sense of God and his ways and what God is up to, you can't. God's unknowable. Even if you put all your energies into it, verse 16, when I applied my heart to know wisdom, even if you lie awake thinking about it, verse 16, even though one sees no sleep day or night, even if you make it your life's work, verse 17, for though a man labors to discover it, and even if you're the smartest man who ever lived, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. Do what you can, however clever you might be, however hard you work at it, you won't be able to make sense of God. He and his ways are unknowable. Verse 17, that I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done. From a purely earthly perspective, under the sun, you can't make sense of God. Though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. Okay, so that's bookend number one, God's unknowable. So what's bookend number two? What's at the other end of the shelf? Well, that bookend is, death is the end. So chapter 9, verse 2, all things come alike to all. One event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the clean. Sorry, to the good, the clean, the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As is the good, so is the sinner, he who takes an oath, as he who fears an oath. This is an evil that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to them all. One thing. What's the one thing that happens to all? The answer is death. Truly the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that they go to the dead. But for him who is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. What happens to all, whoever you are, is death. When the Second World War broke out, C.S. Lewis commented, we now have less chance of dying of cancer. One certain thing in an uncertain world, I'm going to die. So those are Solomon's two bookends, okay? God is unknowable, and death is the end. And what lies between is your life and mine. Those are the certainties which most people in the UK go along with. There's no God, or if there is, you can't know him, and death is the end. Maybe they're the certainties that you go along with. Well, that being so, what are we to do with the in-between? How do I fill my bookcase, if you like? How do I live? How am I to make the best of it? What is the life that's worth living? Well, Solomon's now going to make five observations, okay? There is no God, or there is, you can't know him. Death is the end. Well, he's now going to make five observations, then he's going to draw a conclusion. And as he does, see if you agree with what Solomon says. See if you agree with his observations. And see if you agree with the conclusion he comes to. So observation number one. At the end of the day, if you can't know God and death is the end, at the end of the day, it makes no difference how you live. Chapter 8, verse 14. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. So Solomon, the good guys get treated like the wicked, and the wicked get rewarded like they're the good guys. The good die young, the wicked live long. Who can make sense of that? I said this also is vanity. It's absurd. It's unfair. So you have Joseph Stalin. He can tyrannize the Soviet Union for 3 decades. He can butcher people in their millions, and he can live to the relatively comfortable age of 74. When there are decent, honest, good people who are taken before their time. So that's the way the world works. Why bother being good? Why care if you're evil? At the end of the day, it makes no difference how you live. Observation number two. Don't waste your time looking for answers. We've already talked about that, haven't we? Verse 16, when I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night, you stay awake for days trying to work it all out, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. What's more, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. So Solomon, when I try to make sense of it all, what did I discover? I discovered that heaven above is unknowable and earth below doesn't make sense. Though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. The world is full of clever people. Whatever much they apply their mind and intellect, they can't find any answers, so waste of time even looking for answers. If I can paraphrase a philosopher by the name of Nietzsche, he said, we came from meaninglessness, we're going towards meaninglessness, and in between we try to create meaning. Jean-Paul Sartre said, man is a crumpled piece of paper in the rain, whose only relief is death. They're clever people, aren't they? Big minds, big intellects, but they haven't got any answers. So Solomon, you're not as clever as people like that, so don't even begin to look for an answer. It's a complete waste of time. Don't even bother. Observation number three. Since God is unknowable and death is the end, don't waste your time trying to please God. Look at chapter 9, verse 1. For I considered all this in my heart, so that I could declare it all, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. People know neither love nor hatred by anything they see before them. It's not a very good translation. Better translation says it like this. So I reflected on all this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands. Okay? But no man knows whether love or hate awaits him. See what Solomon is saying? He's saying, if there is a God, he's the great dictator. And being the great dictator, he'll do whatever he wants to do. So even if you think you're pleasing God by living a good religious life, how do you know? If he's unknowable, how do you know you're pleasing him? How do you know you're doing what God wants you to do? When I was a Catholic, there were certain things that you weren't allowed to do, and if you did them, they were a sin. Sort of, you know, don't eat fish on Fridays and not to eat meat and all those sorts of things. But then later on, the church changed its mind. And those things were no longer a sin. So in the 1960s, if I did those things, it would be a sin. And I'd be going to hell. But if I did those things in the 1980s, well, it's not a sin, you're fine. So if I die in the 60s, oh, if I live to the 1980s, oh, I'm fine. We're finding a book of prayers. And then if I said a certain prayer every day for a month, I'd be forgiven everything. No punishment. A plenary indulgence. I was really pleased about that. Solved everything. So what if I not found that book of prayers? See what Solomon is saying? No man knows whether love or hate await him. You might think you're pleasing God and living the life that honours him, but how do you know? How do you know you're winning God's love? How do you know you're escaping God's hatred? Who knows what awaits them at death, whether it's heaven or hell? None of us know. I don't know, says Solomon. So don't waste your life trying to please God. Observation number 4. Says Solomon, life is short. All things come alike to all. Verse 2, one event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good, the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and to him who does not sacrifice. As is the good, so is the sinner, he who takes an oath, as he who fears an oath. One thing happens to them all. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. Life is short. You can be the Pope or Richard Dawkins. You can be a VC winner or you can be Jihadi John. You can be Mother Teresa or Madonna. But whatever you do, whatever you've been, one thing happens to all. Death. The great killjoy. A chap called Eugene Christian. He wrote a book rather ambitiously titled How to Live to be 100. He died at 69. Why would you write a book? Anyway, he died at 69. There was a chap called Gerald Evans. He was a Welshman. And he founded the Life Extension Society. And he advocated cryogenics, where they freeze the body. And when medical science has caught up with whatever killed you, they thaw you out and then they give you the cure. Well, he died in 1986. And his society has since folded. One thing happens to all, says Solomon. You can't escape it. You can't get away from it. Life is short. Death is certain. He says, verse 3, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. Says Solomon, you may not like it, but there it is. He says, you're all going to die. And of course, what happens when people know they're going to die? If people knew that the world was going to end at midnight, would there be a sort of sudden outbreak of conscientiousness and people being good to each other? Would there be a sudden outbreak of morality? No, if people knew the world was going to end tonight at midnight, well, they'd party like there's no tomorrow. People do all the things that they would want to do before time ran out. Maybe they wouldn't care who got in the way or who got hurt. Verse 3, truly the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that they go to the dead. Death makes a mockery of everything. If we're all going to die, then nothing else matters, does it? How depressing. Observation number 5. Life is unfair. Look at verse 11. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favour to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. For man also does not know his time, like a fish caught in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared in the evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. So Solomon, life is unfair. Just because you're the fastest doesn't mean you're going to win the race. 2002, the Winter Olympics, there was an Australian, Steve Bradbury, who won Australia's first ever winter gold medal. He was a speed skater. And to come to the final, with just 15 metres to go, he was fifth in a field of five. He was in last place. When the four skaters in front of him, they all fell over. And there was this sort of massive pile-up. And because he was in last place, because he was off the pace, he simply skated past the wreckage into first place and won the gold medal. As Solomon says, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Just because you've got the biggest army, the most tanks, what does that prove? Doesn't mean you're going to win. Nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favour to men of skill. Just because you're brighter and smarter and more gifted, doesn't mean that there's going to be some idiot somewhere who's going to earn more money, get more recognition and more plaudits than you. You never left out the team? How could they pick him? I'm much better than he is. Life is unfair. Then says Solomon this. He says, but time and chance happen to them all. You're speaking in the wrong place at the wrong time. Some people are just unlucky, aren't they? An RAF air crew were flying over Germany in a Halifax bomber during the war. They had with them a trainee pilot. He was just out of school. It was his second raid, and there he stood by the pilot, watching and learning. They flew over some very heavy anti-aircraft fire, some flak, and the lad was hit, and he bled to death. Next morning, the air crew examined their battered Halifax, and they were able to trace the trajectory of that significant lump of German metal. It was just 2 inches across. It had come through the bottom of the aircraft to sever an artery in the young man's thigh, but it had continued on its upward path to tear a hole through the navigator's seat. But at the time, the navigator had been elsewhere. So one piece of metal, and one dies, and one lives. One's unlucky, and one has a lucky escape. Time and chance happen to them all. For man also does not know his time. That young man standing there, he wasn't expecting it, was he? Like fish taken in a cruel net, it was cruel. Like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. Death, when it comes to Solomon, is always sudden and unexpected. It always comes too soon. Life is cruel. Life is unfair. Solomon's five observations. So there are bookends. God is unknowable. Death is the end. We live in between. Well, Sir Solomon, as you live your life, remember observation number one, it makes no difference how you live. And observation number two, there's no point looking for answers. And observation number three, pleasing God is a waste of time because you don't know whether or not you're earning his favor or otherwise. And observation number four, life is short. And number five, life is unfair. His observations. Okay, Solomon, what then is your conclusion? If that's the two bookends and that's your observations about my life that's in between the two bookends, how then am I supposed to live? How do I make the best of it? Come on, Solomon, tell me, what is this life that's worth living? You're clever. You're cleverer than all of us, Solomon. What's the answer? Tell me. chapter 8, verse 15. Here's Solomon's answer. So I commended enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry. For this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life which God gives him under the sun. Says Solomon, since the only certainty you've got is today, enjoy today to the full. It's the only certainty you've got. So eat, drink, and be merry. And if you want a bit more flesh on the bone, says Solomon, well, chapter 9, verse 4. But for him who is joined to all the living, there is hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. Just be thankful you're alive. It's better to be a whimpering, mangy scavenger than a dead hero. Verse 5, for the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. And they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love, their hatred, and their envy have now perished. Nevermore will they have a share in anything done under the sun. If death is the end and you can know nothing of beyond the grave, this is Solomon, ultimately our lives, our loves, our hates, our jealousies, they have no meaning at all. 20 or so years ago, we were clearing a house. We found a box of black and white photographs. Some of the photographs were 100 years old. They're photographs of weddings and family scenes and portraits. And no one knew who these people were. They'd been lovingly kept, but now they meant nothing to anybody, because the people to whom they meant something were dead as well. They'd all died years ago. So as I looked at them, what did I care of their loves and their triumphs and their scandals? And just as they were forgotten, well, says Solomon, so I too will be forgotten. So since the only certainty is now, is the moment, is today, eat, drink, and be merry. Verse 7, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart. For God has already accepted your works. Or better translation, now is the time that God is favoring you. God's smiling on you. The sun is shining. Well, make hay while the sun shines, because who knows what will happen tomorrow. Verse 8, let your garments always be white and let your head lack no oil. Ask Sir Solomon, today's the only day you've got, so put on your best. Go partying. Don't worry. Be happy. And if you're in love, well, there are no love stories beyond the grave. So if you're in love, be passionate. Be romantic now. Verse 9, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which is given you under the sun, all your days of vanity. For that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. It's all you've got, so enjoy it now. Ultimately, your life is meaningless. It's a vain life. It's an empty life. Who cares what you do? Says Solomon, just do it. Verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it. Just do it with all your might. Do it now. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. Eat, drink, and be merry. Well, what do you think of Solomon's conclusion? Are you happy with it? Is it a good conclusion? Sounds okay, doesn't it? Eat, drink, and be merry. Live long and prosper. But are you never bored? Or lonely? Or sad? And isn't it confusing pleasure with satisfaction? We've never had more pleasure, have we? We've never been less satisfied. We've never had more food and drink and laughter. And we probably never felt more empty. Eat, drink, and be merry. It sounds like we're distracting ourselves. Sounds like we're avoiding the issues. Sounds like we're bored. And we don't know what to do. I sort of wandered in the room and there was something on the television. And it was one of these sort of red carpet things. And they were talking to people I'd never seen before. And I didn't know who their names were, but they were somebody's. And they were interviewing them on the red carpet. And it was all special. But actually, if you looked into the eyes of the people being interviewed, they were bored. Everyone was bored. Everyone was pretending this is a great time and a great moment. But it was so empty. It was so boring. We don't know what to do we, with our lives? You say, eat, drink, and be merry, Solomon. But I don't know what to do with my life. Surely there's got to be more to my life than that. Have you heard of Ernest Hemingway? One of the most famous writers of the 20th century. He took Solomon at his word. And he lived life to the full. Drinking, brawling, posing, women. He married four times. Bullfighting, big game hunting, deep sea fishing. He was incredibly successful. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature. What a life. Eat, drink, and be merry. And then he put a gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. Solomon's answer wasn't the answer. It didn't work. And maybe if Solomon's conclusion is wrong, then Solomon's observations are wrong. Number one, says Solomon, makes no difference how you live. Is that really true? Is it okay to be a Stalin? Did Jimmy Savile get away with it? Okay, they're the monsters. But if we're honest with ourselves, we're not saints. We all draw our lines. And they went further across those lines than most of us. But we all go beyond the lines we draw, don't we? Why do I feel guilty and ashamed? Why do I do things that I regret? Why do I hurt those who are closest to me? Why do I get swept along with the crowd when I don't want to? I don't want to be part of this, but I find myself a part of it. It does make a difference how you live. So Solomon number two, there are no answers. Again, is that true? Jaycan sometimes describes the Telugu villagers as frogs in a well. And if you look in the wells in Sri Lanka, they go down deep and there at the bottom of the well might be a frog looking back at you. They're frogs in a well. They've seen so little. They've never seen beyond their village. But maybe I'm a frog in a well. Living under the sun, all I see is a small part of the sky, a small piece of the picture. Maybe there is an answer, I just can't see it from where I am under the sun. And Solomon says, number three, don't waste your life trying to please God, because you'll never know whether you're on the right side or the wrong side of God. But what if God is not the great dictator in the sky? What if God has come down among us, not to condemn, but to save? Not the unknowable God, but the God who can be known. Wouldn't that be worth knowing? As to Solomon number four, life is short. Okay. But is that a reason for partying? Surely if life is short, it makes the business of life all the more serious and it makes getting an answer all the more urgent. I've got so little time. I'm a mayfly. I'll be dead by the end of the day, as it were. So I need answers. If life is short, don't avoid the issue. I need to find the life that is worth living. I'll be dead soon and I don't want to die. And so Solomon number five, life is unfair. Time and chance happen to them all. Some people are lucky, some people are unlucky. Well, am I happy to trust my future to luck? Will that help me to sleep easily in my bed? Frank Sinatra sang, "I did it my way." But on his deathbed, his last words were, "I am losing." Well, I don't want to stuff my death pillow with nettles. I don't want to lose. So if we're dead honest, we're not happy with Solomon's conclusion because it doesn't chime, doesn't make sense. And neither are we happy, therefore, with his observations. So what's all this about? Well, if the conclusion is wrong, if the observations are wrong, maybe it's because our starting point is wrong. Says Solomon, God is unknowable. Really? Says Solomon, death is the end. Is it? You see what Solomon's doing? My friend, if we're honest, most of us get rid of God. Maybe God is, maybe God isn't. I don't know. He's unknowable. I can put him out of the picture. And most of us live as though this life is the only life there is, and death is the end. Okay, so Solomon, let's run with that. Go with that. Go with the logic of that, because we don't think about it. We don't follow it through. Think about it, says Solomon. Think about it. Go with that. And when we go with it, we find we don't like the conclusion. I don't like that conclusion. Eat, drink, and be merry. It doesn't make sense. And actually, I don't really go along with the observations that lead me to that conclusion. Which means that if my viewpoint makes no sense of life, God is unknowable and death is the end, then it's probably because my viewpoint is wrong. And actually, I'm a frog in a well. We're all frogs in the well. And all we're doing is looking up at a piece of sky. That's why Solomon keeps saying, under the sun, under the sun. You can't see when you're in the well. All you can see is the sky. And you can't build the picture from just what you can see under the sun. It's not that there isn't an answer. It's just that under the sun I can't see the answer. And what Solomon is doing, he's arguing with you on your own terms. And he's driving you to the logic of your position. Most people say, God is unknowable, death is the end, this is the only life I've got. Okay, let's run with that. Oh, I don't like that conclusion. Oh, I don't think that's true. I don't want to go along with that. Well, then maybe it is because you've got it wrong at the start. Maybe God is knowable. Maybe death is not the end. Maybe there's a much bigger picture. He's driving you to the logic of your position. And if you're not happy with it, it's because, well, it's because it's wrong. So briefly as we close, what is the answer? What is the life that's worth living? Now, apparently many men at the moment are going through a midlife crisis. I don't necessarily mean many men in this room are going through a midlife crisis, but lots has been written at the moment. And I was, not because I'm going through a midlife crisis, I was reading an article about it. And it was ways to avoid the midlife crisis. And there were five things of suggestions, you see. And one of the things is to tell yourself a better story. Okay, and I think that this Dr. So-and-so said, choose a story that makes you happy. I don't want that. I want a story that's true. I don't want to keep lying to myself. I want a story that's true. And ultimately, therefore, the only story that really matters, because it's true, is that the eternal God became a man. And Jesus is his name. And he came down to the well. He became one of us. And he came down to us to reveal the true picture, the world beyond the sky. And not just to reveal the full picture, but also to rescue us. Because death is not the end. The reason I feel guilty, the reason why I live with regrets, is because I've wronged God. I haven't loved God with all my heart, and I haven't loved everyone else as I've loved myself. Which is why, says the Bible, on Judgment Day, there is no way I can prove my innocence. And since the wages of sin is death, eternal punishment in that other place, I therefore need rescuing. And so Jesus came down, and he went to a cross. And if the wages of sin is death, then Jesus died that punishing death for sin that I deserve to die. So that all who come to him can receive a new life, a new beginning, a life where I'm forgiven, where I'm reconciled to my Maker, where I discover the life that is worth living. Jesus died. He rose again. He ever lives. And this is what he says. He says, I have come that they might have life and have it to the full. Or as another version says, I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. So Solomon, run down that road with the logic, God is unknowable, death is the end, and you'll come to the conclusion, just live for today, live for the moment, eat, drink and be merry. But the fact is, we can't run with that because we're bored with it and we feel empty and we're unsatisfied and all we're doing is distracting ourselves. And we're amusing ourselves to death and we're laughing while we, like lemmings, tip over the edge. We're like fish out of water, dying. And yet we've been conditioned to think that water will ruin us. Oh, stay away from Jesus. But when we turn from our sins, when we surrender to Jesus Christ, Lord, I'm in a mess. Save me. Oh, Lord, I've got so many things I regret. Forgive me. Lord, I can't make a difference. Change me. When we come to him, what do we find? We find the fish is put back in the water. And we come alive. We find life. Life to the full. Life that fills our emptiness to overflowing. Abundant life. Life that can never die. What is the answer? Hear the voice of Jesus. What is the life? The life is found in him. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full.